The Tom Woods Show, episode 2219.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I could not be happier to be joined once again by our great friend, Robert Barnes, who I think when I was on his program he does with Viva Fry, I think it was one of the best interviews I've ever done. So I hope I can do him some small fraction of that immense favor and courtesy here. So Robert, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
All right, listen, obviously we want to talk about what the heck just happened with Alex Jones and the nearly $1 billion settlement that came out of it. But just in case people haven't been listening, either to you or me, can you just give people, what would be your elevator pitch for why Robert Barnes is a guy to listen to?
Well, I've been representing people all across the political spectrum for about 20 years in a wide range of cases all across the country and, in fact, the world. You know, sometimes people get mad at somebody I've represented, and I say, don't worry about it. My clients hate each other, so there's no issue there. You know, the only common denominators, my clients are generally underdog cases, do civil cases, criminal cases, state cases, federal cases. But usually the other side has a lot more power, leverage, and influence than they do. So even if I'm representing somebody famous or perceived to be well off, like Wesley Snipes or someone else, when they're up against the U.S. government, they're the underdog. So those are the only common denominators. The cases that attract me are cases of great consequence to public policy across the country. And so those are the kind of cases I do. And we've had an unusual and exceptional success rate given the odds. We go into cases that nobody thinks you can win. And, you know, we bat about 500, which is pretty good.
Yeah, especially given their cases nobody thinks you can win. If you're batting 500, that's unbelievable. So I want to start with the big picture and then drill down into the details. The big picture seems to me, and especially after things I've heard from you, is as follows. And this echoes something I said just the other day on this show. Sometimes an individual, let's say, could be Donald Trump, could be Alex Jones, could be Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whoever it is, it doesn't have to be political, but sometimes an individual represents something more than just that individual. I think Trump didn't even fully understand his own significance at the time. And I think that's been true of a lot of people. So Alex Jones represents something. Now, obviously, he's not everybody's cup of tea. And, you know, I'm sure he said things that aren't true and whatever. I don't listen to him, but I don't have a burning hatred for him. And I like what he represents. He represents a middle finger to the establishment. He represents the idea that they're not telling you the whole truth and that you're going to have to dig around and look for it yourself. Now, in terms of that, I see nothing to object to. And it seems to me that because everybody knows he represents that, that colors all of this. It covers the whole legal proceeding. It colors the case itself. Is that the way you look at it?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, they're using the Alex Jones case in part to target him and what he represents, but they're also using it to create very perilous precedents for weaponizing the legal system against dissident speech, for showing that you can do a complete on-broadcast show trial, Soviet-style show trial in America with very little complaint from the legal academy or from judges and courts. And the combination of the two poses real imminent risk to the rest of us. Jones has always been the canary in the coal mine. Sometimes he himself is the canary warning about something that's going to happen like he was during the pandemic. Or in other cases, what happens to him makes him the canary in the coal mine. He, of course, was the most famous high-profile target for big tech censorship. Some of us kept warning at the time, this is an example they want to set for everybody else. A lot of people, unfortunately, didn't listen. And then, you know, just a few years later, the president of the United States is banned from social media. So once again, we should pay great attention to the Alex Jones case because the Alex Jones case is much bigger than Alex Jones.
And now also we know this is all happening against the background of the following context. We now know that somebody like Alex Berenson on Twitter was singled out by name by the White House in talking to Twitter. There are individuals who, now, of course, he managed to claw his way back onto Twitter. Most people aren't so lucky. But it's pretty clear to me, at least, and a lot of others, that this is not an accident. There's an actual campaign, supposedly for our own good, to eliminate certain dissident voices. Now, of course, they're never going to come out and say, we're taking this person off the air, so to speak, because we're evil bastards, and that's what evil bastards do. They're always going to have some pretext. Oh, we're trying to protect you against misinformation. We're trying to make sure you have accurate information on which to make your decision. Of course they're going to say that. No dictator ever says, I'm just doing this to be a bastard. But that's the background of this, is that people are, and people who probably a few years ago when Alex Jones first got into trouble, probably didn't lift a finger or didn't say a word about what was happening to Alex Jones because they never thought in a million years it could happen to them.
No doubt. And I think that they are getting away with it primarily because he's more of an outlier. Yeah, he's more of an outsider. He's more of an institutional outcast, has a very big public following, but not amongst the professional class, the managerial class, the privileged, powerful folks. And they bought into fake narratives out there. Like, people think he said things he actually didn't. They think he failed to participate in the legal process in ways that he actually did not fail to do. And a lot of things that took place that are so unusual, even the mainstream media has been calling it unusual, exceptional, rare, what's been happening to Jones in these trials, is being mostly overlooked by a lot of people because they say, oh, it's Alex Jones. So Alex Jones is never going to be me. And that's their fundamental flaw, that they never start out with somebody popular. They didn't start out with Trump. They started out with Alex Jones. And that's the same thing here. And it's the complete, overt, open weaponization of their power within the judicial process to punish dissident speech, to censor and shame any involvement. And the plaintiff's lawyers were open about this. The plaintiff's lawyers in both trials said they were there to shut up Alex Jones, to remove him from ever being on the air ever again. After the Connecticut trial was over with the absurd verdict that was issued, they said their goal wasn't to collect on their verdict. Their goal was to get people to stop supporting Alex Jones and to take him off the air. So that should be terrifying to people, what we're witnessing. The last time we saw this meaningfully in America, 1950s, a lot of Southern courts weaponized their judicial process to try to shut down dissident speech, went after the NAACP, went after the New York Times and Sullivan versus the New York Times, in order to shut up, silence, censor, punish speech that spoke out about civil rights. And fortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court stepped in. It stepped in again when they tried to do it to the people related to Westboro Baptist. But this is even more egregious and even more extreme and even more of a greater risk to freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of association, and dissident speech in America.
And incidentally, you haven't got a chance, if the media is against you, you haven't got a chance of getting your version of events out through the media. You can get it out there through alternative sources. But just think, I could probably make a list of a dozen things the average person believes about Trump that are demonstrably false. Scott Adams has placed a lot of emphasis on what he calls the very fine people hoax. A lot of people still think, he said, white supremacists are very fine people. I mean, you can go down the list. There's a whole list of them, or that he mocked a disabled reporter. A lot of people still believe that. So if they believe that about the president of the United States, what hope does a guy, even as well-known as Alex Jones, have? So this is the environment in which we live. Now, when you use the term show trial, I mean, people are going to say you're going to have to defend that statement. What was particularly unusual about it?
Basically, the trial, both trials were in Texas and in Connecticut, were completely scripted effectively. So, for example, in Texas, they had a movie documentary crew in filming the whole trial. And what do I mean by scripted? What I mean is that Jones was not allowed to defend himself at all, fundamentally. He wasn't allowed to bring up certain topics. He wasn't allowed to discuss the fact that he didn't intend to harm anybody. He wasn't allowed to discuss the fact that he didn't name anybody that's suing him. He wasn't allowed to discuss the fact that he had apologized over and over and over again for anything he got wrong about Sandy Hook. He was not allowed to present evidence that the harm that the plaintiffs were complaining about were not caused by him. He was not allowed to tell people he didn't send anybody to anybody's house and stalk anybody, that he wasn't the one responsible for what anybody else believed. Wasn't allowed to tell them that he almost never talked about Sandy Hook ever, that it was less than 0.1% of all topics he covered in the relevant time frame. Wasn't allowed to tell people that 99% of what InfoWars published, printed, and broadcast said Sandy Hook happened. That was actually the editor of InfoWars, Paul Joseph Watson, was one of the leading critics of the Sandy Hook hoax theory. All of that was excluded. Wasn't allowed to present any of it. Wasn't allowed to tell them that the gross revenues they were talking about was nowhere near what the net revenue was. Wasn't allowed to tell them that he made no money whatsoever off of Sandy Hook, that in fact it cost him customers and supporters, that he wasn't allowed to discuss any of that. In fact, to show you how egregious it was, a lot of this was tied to political motivations of the plaintiffs. In the Connecticut case, the lead lawyer, Norm Pattis, very liberal, old school civil rights, civil liberties lawyer for Alex Jones, simply wanted to explore whether other things caused the people's harm, whether there was any actual evidence that they had in terms of, you know, empirical evidence, expert evidence that they had suffered harm, and also wanted to ask about whether their political motivations is really the reason they were suing Alex Jones. He wasn't allowed to ask any of that, so much so that he wasn't even allowed to name the words Hillary Clinton in the trial. Even though Hillary Clinton was essential to instigating all of this lawfare against Alex Jones, it's the one name that could not be brought up in the Connecticut trial. This is such a show trial. The Soviets and Castro would be embarrassed to present it on live TV. But that's what happened to Alex Jones.
Is this, when you're talking about the documentary crew being in the courtroom, is this where the, I think I heard you say somewhere else that the judge had been very pro-mask. And then when she realized she's going to be in a documentary, all of a sudden the mask came off.
Oh, you saw that. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, one, I've never seen a case. They even had the camera, the movie camera of this movie crew, staring down the jury the entire time. This is unheard of. This is utterly unprecedented in the history of American law. In Connecticut, as well as in Texas, Jones was told that if he deviated from the script, and what do I mean by that? He was told he could only answer yes, no, or I don't know, and that he couldn't mention a whole bunch of words or topics in his own defense. He couldn't tell them he was innocent. He couldn't tell them that he intended no harm to anybody. Couldn't tell them that he'd apologize. Couldn't tell them that he didn't make the money they were talking about. I mean, give you how nuts this was. One of the expert witnesses in the Texas case claimed that Alex Jones was, the network was worth like $250 million. A network that doesn't even have anybody under contract. Media network, $250 million. That's how nuts it was. But he wasn't allowed to counter that. Wasn't allowed to tell them his company was in bankruptcy. And in the Connecticut case, it got real egregious. He was told that if he didn't answer yes, no, or I don't know, the court would hold him in contempt of court and jail him for 6 months. And so he was put in an impossible predicament because a lot of the questions were Senate-style questions. They were questions you couldn't answer yes or no. You couldn't answer I don't know, because part of the question would have a truth to it and part of the question would have a falsehood to it. And if he answered it wrong by the determination of the court, he could go to jail for perjury charges or he goes to jail for contempt charges. Nothing like this has ever happened. This is even worse than the Chicago 7 trial where Bobby Seale was gagged, because at least Bobby Seale wasn't forced to stand up, get up on the stand and answer questions in a scripted way like Alex Jones was being ordered to do by both courts.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable. And in the mainstream coverage of it, which needless to say, it wouldn't even occur to me to watch, you would like to think that maybe by accident they'd bring somebody on who would say, you know, there are a few things that might give us pause about the way this is being handled and the way Alex Jones has to figure out how to comply with all these crazy restrictions on him while still sort of answering impossible to answer questions. You'd like to think they, at least even by accident, would bring on somebody like that. But I would venture to guess that the rights and the wrongs of how the case was actually handled, I'm just going to assume that hasn't even been raised.
No, because the mainstream media and the courts have ignored this. To give you an example, Alex Jones has basically been denied almost every procedural and substantive right you have to what we call in America your day in court. So, for example, he brought motions to dismiss, motions, what's called strategic litigation against public participation. He was denied entirely his right to even bring those motions. Why? Because on his TV program, he was critical of the plaintiff's lawyers. That's never been done in the history of the country, where they say, well, you know what? If you're sued, you now lose your free speech rights. You can't even talk about the case without other rights and remedies being stripped from you. He was denied his rights to bring motions for summary judgment. He was denied his rights to trial by jury on the merits of any aspect of either case. And the whole grounds was so-called default. Now, default has always been very dangerous because it's an attempt by courts to strip you of your procedural rights and strip you of your rights to trial by jury, which go all the way back to the Magna Carta in the 1200s, over 800 years ago. And in this case, what was incredible was Jones produced more discovery than any defendant, media defendant in a libel case has ever done And everybody could see that by watching the trials. They're like, they have everything. They have all the tapes, all the emails, all the texts, all the payment information. They know exactly how much money he made at exactly which time on exactly which day of exactly which year. A ridiculous amount of information he turned over. Millions of pages of documents and texts and financial information, etc. Despite that, the court said, no, I'm going to declare you defaulted and you won't be allowed to defend yourself or have a trial by jury. So how did the court come up with that? Because the whole premise of the case was built on a caricature of Alex Jones. I called it the fake case about supposedly fake news. And the reason was, the myth was that Alex Jones originated, instigated, propagated, promoted, pitched, profited from the Sandy Hook hoax theory. And that that's all he talked about, that he talked about these people by name, that he sent people to these individuals' homes, houses, to harass them at the grocery store and the school and so forth. All of that was false. Alex Jones rarely talked about the Sandy Hook hoax theory. They had basically 7 minutes of words over 7 years out of a guy who published, printed, broadcast, or spoke more than 7 million words. So it was literally one out of a million. Actually, InfoWars was one of the main people critical of the Sandy Hook hoax theory because of editorial role by Paul Joseph Watson. He didn't make money off of it at all. He didn't send anybody to harass anybody. He didn't send anybody to people's homes. He never disclosed people's personal addresses. Never happened. So how do they win when they know their whole theory, their whole premise is built on a big lie? They would say, give us the evidence of your guilt. Show us the secret business plan that shows you profited off of this. Show the all the times you were secretly talking about it that somehow we managed not to catch, even though Mediaite tapes and records everything InfoWars does. And so he's like, no, I'm innocent. I don't have evidence of my guilt because I'm innocent. They're like, aha, that thereby you are now declared guilty. It's Inquisition style. Either you confess or your refusal to confess is now used as a finding of confession against you.
Hey, folks, a quick message from our important sponsor, Policy Genius. Everybody's talking about how expensive everything's getting, but now imagine your loved ones having to cope with all that without you around to help. Life insurance typically gets more expensive as we age, so now's the time to get it. In fact, I think if people realized just how inexpensive a really good life insurance policy is that Policy Genius can help you find, they wouldn't hesitate to get it at all. They would do it today. I personally have great life insurance coverage, and it gives me extraordinary peace of mind. Well, Policy Genius was built to modernize the life insurance industry. Their technology makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from top companies like AIG and Prudential in just a few clicks to find your lowest price. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $17 per month for $500,000 of coverage. And Policy Genius has licensed agents who can help you find options that offer coverage in as little as a week and avoid unnecessary medical exams. There are no added fees when you use Policy Genius, and your personal info is private. Your loved ones deserve a financial safety net. You deserve a smarter way to find and buy it. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description or on the show notes page to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Can you say something about jury selection in either of these trials?
So in Texas, as an example, I don't know as much about the Connecticut jury selection because it wasn't as published, but in the Texas case, they were asked in advance if they would commit to a huge, ridiculous verdict. So to give people some context, the average defamation or libel verdict or intentional infliction of emotional distress verdict in America is less than $100,000. I know from the various polling that was done in this case that when they heard both sides, the average jury verdict was $100,000 or less per plaintiff. So you'd be looking at a total verdict risk of around $2 million or less. That's the norm. The norm are not these big verdicts and big amounts that you sometimes see thrown around. Yet in this case, in the jury selection in Texas, they only would allow jurors who would pre-commit to, hey, even if there's no physical harm, even if there's no business harm, even if there's no reputational harm, will you agree $10 million per person is a reasonable verdict? And if you said no, you got kicked out of the jury process. I mean, that's what made it insane at so many levels. And in Texas, they know they're on camera the entire time. Two levels of camera, not just the court cameras. They got three different movie cameras pointed at them at different times throughout the trial, one throughout the whole trial. So they know their characters in a film. This is unheard of in American law, in American civil justice.
Was there nothing that the Jones side of that could have done? I mean, can't they throw out some prospective jurors?
The problem was the courts. So usually your right to exclude jurors is limited, like it's as low as three. in a civil case. And here you had two jury pools that came from liberal, democratic, anti-Alex Jones jury pools. So we're seeing a continuation and extension of the problems we're seeing in the District of Columbia. We saw here, it's noteworthy where they sued him. They sued him in Austin, Texas, and they sued him around Sandy Hook, Connecticut. And these are two overwhelmingly liberal, democratic, anti-Alex Jones constituencies. So you start with a bunch of people who already hate you for the most part, or dislike you, or have a negative impression of you. And then the only way you can exclude people is if you get the court to agree that that's a cause strike. But the court had a clipped, reversed version of a cause strike. A cause strike was somebody who wasn't willing to lynch Alex Jones. So, oh, you're not willing to lynch him? Oh, you're out of here. You are willing to lynch him? You're on. And because the court has such control over the jury selection part of the process, they effectively eviscerated Alex's right to an impartial jury.
Let's try and understand the Sandy Hook family's claims here. Now, I guess the claim must be, because I guess they're claiming that they were harassed by people, and that was presumably instigated by what Jones said. But are they really claiming that their reputations were damaged? Are they trying to claim that a lot of people believed that they were crisis actors, and so their reputations were damaged, and therefore a defamation suit is appropriate?
To my knowledge, the other extraordinary aspects of this case was several constitutional limits on defamation were thrown out, along with procedural rights. So, for example, all of these cases were outside the statute of limitations. Courts didn't care. They just eviscerated the statute of limitations because many of the statements were way outside the statute. They were as much as 10 years old. Then the second aspect, what was really scary about the premise, and I'll highlight one plaintiff, a plaintiff that the jury gave $90 million to. And that's an FBI agent who sued Alex Jones in Connecticut, who knows nobody who died at Sandy Hook, wasn't one of the parents of any children at Sandy Hook, who admitted on the stand he never saw Alex Jones talk about him ever. So how in the world is he not only suing, but a jury writing a check for $90 million to an FBI agent, FBI lawyer, no less? Their premise was, if you question an institutional narrative of any kind, you question any narrative about a public event, number one. And number two, there's anybody out there who's within kind of the zone of danger who could feel, in other words, they're inside of a safe space, because this is the first real safe space litigation we've seen. If you know, when you make certain statements challenging an event, that there might be people who are within a safe space who will feel emotionally impacted, they get to sue you. In Connecticut, it went even crazier. They get to sue you under consumer protection laws. Because they said, well, Alex Jones sells a product in Connecticut. It's like, yeah, but you're not suing him related to anything he sold. They're like, well, if you make speech we don't like, then we can punish you under the consumer protection laws as if you sold a bad product. In other words, it's like the PayPal principle where they're trying to put $2,500 fines on people if you use PayPal and say something they don't like, even if the two are not connected. That's what they affirmed and approved in Connecticut. First time that's ever been approved in the history of America. So basically, they're saying if you use any services, if you sell any products, we can now sue you if we don't like your speech. If you talked about a public event that you knew might offend us, even if you never talked about us. So they didn't produce, to my knowledge, any expert evidence that any of them suffered any reputational damage. In fact, what was stunning is how few of them could identify anything Alex Jones said that caused them direct emotional damage. And that's why in Connecticut, they had to kind of rig the case. The court found that the jury wasn't even allowed to decide, and Jones wasn't even allowed to present evidence as to whether anybody who ever said anything bad about the parents had any connection to Jones. They had to presume as a matter of law, anybody who ever said anything bad about the parents, Alex Jones is responsible. It's that kind of thing. So they took that doctrine and extended it in a whole new dangerous direction. So they just eviscerated every rule of law. The constitutional requirement of colloquium. People forget about that for the New York Times versus Sullivan case. It was one of the main grounds. It wasn't just the actual malice standard. They said, look, if you say somebody libeled you, they actually have to talk about you. Now, they can talk about you as part of a group, but it has to be a small enough group that they know it's about you. Historically, that has been limited to 25 people. So, for example, if you say all Kentucky Fried Chickens are crap, Kentucky Fried Chicken local franchise can't sue you, right? Because there's too many of them. If, on the other hand, you say, hey, that Kentucky Fried Chicken down on Main and 6th is serving contaminated food, well, then they can sue you. So that's always been the historical difference. Here, hundreds of I mean, literally thousands, tens of thousands of people could theoretically sue Alex Jones under the theory they outlined. Because their theory was, were you someone who knew somebody or had some connection of any kind, even if it's an FBI agent investigating the case, you could sue Alex Jones if you didn't like what he said and it emotionally hurt you. That was the theory of the case. And that's what people still don't appreciate, is how shocking this case eviscerated every rule of law we've ever had to protect freedom of speech in America.
Seems like you could write a whole book about just this case, honestly, and what the implications of it are.
Yeah, I've actually considered it. And that was the trials of Alex Jones and how it damns all of us if we don't reverse it, if the courts don't step in.
Yeah.
Because one of the key problems here is sort of the class prejudice issue. So Jones's audience, he's one of the most well-loved people in large parts of America. According to YouGov, more than 30 million people have a very favorable view of Jones. Amongst your average Republican primary voter, they prefer InfoWars to New York Times as a reliable source. This is a guy who helped promote and get Trump elected in the first place. And what's unique about him is for the political right to have the audience that he has, he's one of the biggest critics of war, of the surveillance state, of the deep state, one of the biggest promoters of Julian Assange and Edward Snowden, was, of course, very early on critical of the vaccine mandates, very critical of the mask mandates, very critical of the lockdowns. Indeed, at almost every protest that initially started throughout the country in 2020, it was Alex Jones and InfoWars fans, which you knew because of the T-shirts they're wearing and the bumper stickers on their cars. So that's why he's always been a real threat to the deep state apparatus. And then he's got a very unique network. He's got a network that doesn't depend on big money donors, doesn't depend on corporate advertisers. In particular, that drives him nuts because big media gets most of its money from big pharma. He promotes alternative natural health supplements that compete directly with big pharma. And so for that reason, he's despised within place of institutional power. But the other problem is, what his audience does not have is a bunch of the privileged, protected professional class. Not a bunch of lawyers, not a bunch of PhDs. They mostly sneer at Alex Jones. Now, Democrats quit sneering at him when Trump was successful. Hillary Clinton basically called for Jones to be targeted in the summer of 2016. And this is a guy who for 25 years been practicing his business and his trade without any major legal problems at all. And all of a sudden, within 2 years, he's facing 24 different lawsuits from people all across the country for all kinds of reasons. Copyright claims, defamation claims, employment claims, I mean, consumer claims, you name it. They came after him full throttle, waged full lawfare against him. They really thought it would crush him. They thought his audience would go away. And what's unique about him is his audience. He's entirely audience-based, that he doesn't rely upon any sponsor, doesn't rely upon any advertiser, doesn't rely upon any big contributor. So it drives him crazy that they don't have gatekeeping control over Jones and Jones's audience. And that's also why they target him. They don't want anybody like Jones to ever appear again. Reminds me a lot, as you were analogizing earlier, to when the Democrats said, we have to make sure not only does Trump get defeated, but that no one like him ever comes up again. That's precisely what they actually said in the closing argument in Texas. This was a message. I mean, that's why, how do you get to a $1 billion verdict over speech? A verdict about 1,000 times bigger than any verdict in the history of the world related to speech. It's because the goal is shut him up, silence him, shame his constituency, terrorize anybody from ever being another Alex Jones again.
Well, that's exactly what I feared you would say, unfortunately. Before I go on, let me say a quick thing that will help a lot of you, and you know who you are. If you are in business and you're getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO, our great sponsor. If you're a small local business, you're trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, increase your visibility with Persist SEO. Or if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis, well, website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. If you're tired of cold calling, use your website as a lead generation engine. If you're not showing up for your services on the search engines, then get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. let's close with this. Everybody in response to this, or a lot of people are saying, well, he'll never pay that because they'll appeal it and there'll be some more rational amount decided on. Number one, is that a guarantee? And well, in fact, I won't even number the questions. I'll say, is that a guarantee? Where would the appeal take place? Would it be with a saner set of circumstances? Like, what's in his future?
Unfortunately, there's no guarantee that that happens. So, you know, Solon versus the New York Times, it took the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene to stop it. Westboro Baptist, $77 million verdict because people didn't like people doing what they did. I get it's controversial, but there's no such thing as a wrong idea, as the Supreme Court made clear. But it took the U.S. Supreme Court to set that aside. You look at this case in Connecticut. The Connecticut courts completely ignored the federal law that limits the ability to sue gun manufacturers for what somebody does criminally with their gun. And the U.S. Supreme Court did intervene. And that's how they end up writing a $73 million check to the same law firm. They managed to blame everybody except who, in my view, was fully responsible for what happened at Sandy Hook, including politicians who ignored the fact that there were school safety problems that they didn't deal with. And they got to cover up after the fact because everybody was focused on the gun or Alex Jones. Like in Connecticut, he goes up to the Connecticut Court of Appeals. He goes up to the Connecticut Supreme Court. The Connecticut courts have shown no willingness to challenge or contest this, no matter how outrageous it is. In Texas, the Texas Court of Appeals that presides over Austin is a bunch of liberal Democrats. They're the ones who created a lot of these ridiculous standards and eviscerated the First Amendment in the first place. So his only hope is with three courts: the Supreme Court of Texas, the Supreme Court of the United States, or the bankruptcy court where his corporate case is pleading out. So those judges can provide some remedy, but I'll be honest, unless there's enough outrage in the court of public opinion, it's unlikely any of the courts will do so.
Wow. Okay. Well, given how important this is for everybody, what do you recommend we do to indicate to whoever's listening that there are a lot of us who are unhappy about this?
This case is an embarrassment to the American civil justice system. They claim to be putting Alex Jones on trial, but in the process, they put American civil justice on trial. And the verdict is bad for American civil justice. Like what I often find talking to people who may, you know, dislike Alex Jones, may be very sympathetic with the Sandy Hook plaintiffs, that we want everybody in America to have their day in court, especially when it's a controversial person. And that's not what happened here. And we want everybody's speech rights protected. We want everybody's freedom of association protected. So there is no legally protected safe space in America. Doesn't exist. That's what all of the perils of the precedent set here establish. And so focus on the broader policy and talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime, any place about it. Share it in whatever form or format you can, because people are often surprised where it works. I have a case, I won't mention the case, but because of people raising issues in the court of public opinion, what could have been a very bad outcome, not only for my client, but for public policy in America, is going to be reversed. It's not going to happen because the other lawyer on the other side heard the concerns and complaints, did an independent inquiry, and was like, you know what? We need to reexamine what we're doing here. So people should never underestimate their voice. The way I like to put it is they don't spend all this time lying to you, and they didn't spend all this time trying to crush Alex Jones unless your voice matters. So make it matter.
Wow. Okay. That is one heck of a way to end this episode. Give people a way they can follow you, because if they don't want to follow you after this episode, they're out of their minds.
The best place is at vivabarneslaw.locals.com. So V-I-V-A, Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S-L-A-W .locals.com.
All right. I'm going to link to that on our show notes page. This is episode 2219. So tomwoods.com/2219. I know you're an insanely busy guy, so I cannot thank you enough for carving out the time to talk to me today. As you know, it's extremely important, and I'm doing what I can to get the word out to my audience. So thanks for helping me out.
Glad to be here.
All right, folks, that is another episode of The Tom Woods Show. I will see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.